Okay, here we go. Welcome back. Hour number three. And for you Catholics out there, or for anyone who pays attention to geopolitics and understands that the Catholic Church and the papacy is involved with international geopolitics, you will have heard that Pope Benedict XVI passed away this week. Was he helped out the door? I don't know. Possible. He was 9 years a prisoner in the Vatican after having been overthrown in a coup de, whatever it would be, it wouldn't be a d'etat, but a coup de pope. And he was kept prisoner 9 years. And so what does that tell you? The current pope is a fraud. Bergoglio, he's a fraud. And the Vatican has been taken over as a political instrument on the world stage. No question about it. They did call Pope Benedict XVI, what did they call him? Pope Emeritus. They came up with a name for him. So they overthrew the guy, removed him from the papacy, and called him Pope Emeritus. Nah, don't buy it. With us tonight, very fortunate and blessed, if I might say that, to have with us Father Paul Kramer, who has been with us many times, understands about the three Fatima prophecies, the secrets, and has helped us a great deal with those and other things. And he's here tonight to talk about what happened with Benedict and the rest of it and where we are right now. What's it all mean, Father Kramer? Welcome back.
Well, it's, as always, it's great to be back on your program. And I think the first thing I want to point out is that the present state of affairs in the church is not acceptable to Catholics. And they have to understand that there is a body of church teaching, and in fact, it is a matter of faith, that if the Pope is indeed a heretic, and it can be proven that the man is guilty of heresy, then he is not a legitimate pope. He is not validly occupying the papal office, and he must be removed. Now, the course of action that has to be taken is that of removal, which is prescribed in the Code of Canon Law. But there's the erroneous thinking in the church by so many who are experts in canon law, and I see these people even on YouTube, on television, saying that, well, Bergoglio is the Pope. They call him Pope Francis. He's the Pope. And the Pope cannot be judged. He's the supreme authority in the church, so there's really nothing we can do about it. So what they've done is, for those who know that his beliefs are heretical, that they are not in conformity with the Catholic faith, they are not compatible with the Catholic faith.
Wow.
And they don't consider the fact that is recognized universally in the church as an article of faith, that those who profess heresy are not members of the Catholic Church. They separate themselves from the church by the very act of professing heresy. And that if a man is not professing the Catholic faith, he's professing some different kind of belief that is incompatible with the Catholic faith, then he separates himself from the church. And this is very clearly the teaching of the Catholic faith. And so they will. What we have had is theologians, bishops, and priests, and others who have been signing open letters and signing documents, petitions, and they addressed this man as the Pope. They call it a filial correction, that they're correcting their spiritual father. They admit, but they still make the fatal mistake of admitting that the man is indeed, certainly and without doubt, the Pope of the Catholic Church, and this is false. So this is an act of defeatism, and they are not. It is unconscious defeatism, But it is an defeatism to address this man as the Pope, as their spiritual father, and that they are correcting him.
Well said.
If you have a Pope who is doing something wrong, then you correct him as you would correct an erring father. Such was the case. I'm trying to think of the name of the Pope. I think it was Nicholas II, if I remember correctly, who issued an order for the bishops to resign their office. And the bishops all unanimously refused. And there were three bishops who wrote a letter to the Pope. Two of them are canonized saints. The other was a future Pope himself. And they threatened the Pope that unless he would rescind this order, they would be forced to disobey. And in that case, the Pope would have no power to oppose them. They use what Francis is doing is he's using as a weapon excommunication and reducing priests to the lay state for infractions that are, in fact, not infractions at all. Those who uphold the faith against the heresies of Bergoglio are being excommunicated, reduced to the lay state, being declared heretics. While Francis is receiving pro-abortion activists as honored guests in the Vatican, he approved the act of and confirmed with his so-called papal act the laicization of the most visible and vocal opponent of abortion, Father Frank Pavone. And the decree of laicization, reducing this man supposedly to the lay state, they refer to him as Mr. Pavone. Huh. Of course, Father Pavone is having none of it. He refuses to acknowledge the validity of such an order, because there is a doctrinally founded canonical tradition in the Church. Because it's founded on a doctrine, this affects the validity of such decrees, that not even the Pope has the power to use reduction to the lay state, what they used to call in canon law degradation, to reduce them to reduction of rank. This could only be done for the most serious of crimes. And unless a man is guilty of a crime that merits being reduced, being thrown out of the priesthood, out of the ranks of the clergy, to be more precise,
right?
It is not a valid decree.
The
priesthood is instituted by Christ. Mm-hmm. That men are called by God to the mm-hmm. priestly vocation. Mm-hmm. And as St. Robert mm-hmm. Bellarmine says, that even if a valid pope would be taking actions that would destroy the Church, it is legitimate to oppose him, to resist. That is, to take active measures to resist such a pope. And in such a case, that pope has no power to retaliate against those who act justly and rightly against him. It is the Apostle Paul who taught, and very explicitly, that he has the authority from God. That authority is to build up the Church, not to destroy. for those who are upholding the law of God, and if the Pope is opposing the law of God, the Pope has no legitimate power to retaliate against priests in such matters. Now, that's if there is a true Pope. But if there is a false Pope, if there is a heretic, then he is simply to be removed. Now, most Catholics seem to be unaware of the fact that there is a body of teaching, which is an infallible teaching of the Church. It is the universal and ordinary magisterium of the Church, which teaches very definitively that if the Pope is a heretic, he is not a legitimate Pope. Pope Pius IX thought that what is unanimously taught by theologians in matters of faith pertains to that universal magisterium of the Church as a matter of faith. So this, we're dealing with matters of faith. This is not a mere matter of theological opinion. Catholics must believe this. One of the great theologians of the 17th century, John of St. Thomas, who researched the point, explained that it is unanimously held by theologians, unanimously taught by theologians,
right,
that if the Pope is a heretic, he is to be judged by the Church. That qualifies us already as a matter of faith. It was Pope Pius, not Pius, Pope Innocent III. Pope Innocent III. Mm-hmm. He was not expressing this as an opinion in a book, but as Pope, he was preaching the doctrine, specifically speaking on the doctrine of the removal of a heretic pope. He explained that the Roman pontiff, the Pope of the Catholic Church, cannot be judged by anyone. His only judge is God, except if he were, to use his own phrase, if he were to wither away into heresy. Then he is already judged by God. And in that case, he can be judged by men. Or rather, he says, he can be shown to be already judged. And he uses the phraseology he uses, that he is simply to be cast out and to be trampled underfoot by men.
Huh.
And he explained what he means by these terms, that he is to be deposed, he is to be removed, and he is to be despised, rejected by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he gives is because the heretic is an alien. A heretic, if a man is a heretic, he doesn't belong to the Church. He's outside of the Church. And therefore, heretics are aliens, and they are to be shunned. And that's why, if a pope were to be a heretic, he would already be rejected by God as pope. And therefore, he is simply to be removed from office. This is the basis of the teaching of the great doctors of the Church, St. Robert Bellarmine, St. Alphonsus Liguori, both of them who teach that by the very act of heresy itself, a pope, even if he were a legitimate pope, if he were to become a heretic, could be visibly seen to be a heretic, he would simply be judged by the Church. He needs to be judged by the Church and removed, because by that very act, he would ipso facto, by the act itself of heresy, he would become a heretic. Now, there have been rulings of the popes in past centuries regarding papal heresy. They are quoted by St. Robert Bellarmine, going all the way back to Pope St. Anacletus, and you find an act of Pope Symmachus, where it is stated by the Pope as a canonical ruling of the Church that the Pope can be judged by no one except for heresy. In the case of heresy, he can be judged by the Church.
Interesting.
St. Alphonsus Liguori and St. Robert Bellarmine both quote these popes of the past ages who issued these rulings, and they're following, and the teaching of Pope Innocent III is a doctrine of the Church. and it is unanimously, it has been in the past unanimously held by theologians, which qualifies it as the universal magisterium. There was in the 19th century there was one prominent theologian who held the opposite opinion that he would still be pope, but one against all does not violate the unanimity. It is a moral unanimity that that remains in force. And it is explained by the great theologian on the power of the Pope and the power of the bishops and councils, Pietro Ballerini, who was quoted by Pope Gregory the 16th as the authority on this point. In fact, whose doctrine became the foundation for the pronouncement of papal infallibility and the papal power, the primacy, the absolute jurisdiction of the Pope, came straight out of the works of Pietro Ballerini. The third chapter of the decree of the First Vatican Council, the third chapter is almost word for word exactly the title of his great book on the power, the ecclesiastical power of the popes and ecumenical councils. And in that book, he explains that these canons, these rulings of the popes, which say that the pope, if he falls into heresy, he can be judged by the church, is to be explained this way. And this is a century before Vatican I defined that the pope has an absolute jurisdiction, that the pope cannot be judged by anyone, and that the pope has the supreme power, so that the pope himself is the final judge in all disputes regarding faith and morals. So that being the case, how could the pope be judged by the church? Well, Father Ballerini explained, as a great jurist and theologian himself, saying that the rulings of the popes are to be understood this way, that if the pope were to become a heretic, he would, by the very act of heresy, cease to be pope. He would lose his jurisdiction, his primacy, right. And therefore he would be judged by the church, not as pope, but as one who had fallen from the pontificate, that fallen from the papacy. And that's why Pope Gregory the 16th, who cites by name Ballerini, says it would not be, no injury would be done to the primacy of the pope, as Ballerini himself wrote, but that the judgment would be made not against the pope, but against one who previously had been the pope. And this is what Pope Gregory the 16th taught on this issue in his great work that he wrote on the attacks against the papacy, published, I think, first in 1798 or 9 or something like that. But then he republished the book when he was reigning as pope. So we have a body of papal teaching that tells us what must be done when the papal rule in the church breaks down, as it has happened, and this is what has happened in the church. The papal rule in the church has broken down. The papacy is a monarchy because the church is founded and structured by the divine constitution of the church is such that the supreme power, the total fullness of supreme power, to use the dogmatic definition of Vatican I,
right,
the total fullness of supreme power resides in the papacy. But if the pope is no longer a true and valid pope, is no longer ruling the church, if a false pope is ruling the church, then the monarchical rule, the papal rule, the primacy has ceased to function to rule the church. And then Pope Gregory the 16th says, in that case, the church must revert temporarily to a more primitive form of rule, which is by the Universal College of Bishops. And an ecumenical council would have to be convened, mm-hmm, to elect a new pope. They would have to issue a decree that the man is not the pope. And it would be a council that would be able to elect a new pope.
Is there the kind of energy in the Vatican at this point in time to come together and do something like this? Is that commitment there? Or have we been given a bunch of ringers who will go along with the fake pope and not contest it?
You just said it perfectly. That's the situation we have now. This is a parallel time to what earlier in the church had been the situation under the Arian heresy, when all of the bishops seemed to be suffering from some kind of a blindness, to use the words of St. Vincent of Lerins, that they suffered some sort of a form of blindness where they fell under the power of the Arians, who denied the divinity of Jesus Christ. Mm. And the Catholic Church, of course, professes the divinity of Christ, and yet the Roman Church was completely infected to the extent that the bishops were either falling into that heresy or were going along with it and compromising with it as if it was no big deal. And this is a situation we have now in the church, but it's not just on one point of dogma. It is the present heresy that is dominating the Roman Church. Already in the days of in the early days of the last century, Pope Saint Pius X referred to it as the synthesis of all heresies. It is fundamentally a denial of the very principles of dogmatic faith in divine revelation. Francis and his gang of sectarians have a different idea of what constitutes divine revelation, because they have a different notion of what is God.
Oh, they have a different agenda entirely, apparently. Yeah.
Their agenda is the pantheistic and Luciferian doctrine of the United Nations Agenda 2030, which is identical with that of the Gnostic and Luciferian sect of Freemasonry. So there is a clear action that must be taken, and Bottarini explains that if it's not possible to convene an ecumenical council, that even the cardinals or the Roman clergy or a Roman synod would have the power to declare that the man is not a legitimate pope, and they could elect a new pope in his place. Francis, of course, has named so many cardinals that that you would not get a majority of cardinals to denounce him and reject him as pope. But that is not a problem. In such a case as that, those who are of the Catholic persuasion and who reject the new religion, the false religion, they would have the power to convene and declare him no longer, if he had ever been a pope, he is not a pope, that he has fallen from any office he may have held and from any ecclesiastical dignity. In fact, this already happened once. With the case of a man who called himself Pope Benedict XIII, he was elected by cardinals, but there were rival popes at the time. This was in the 1400s, and the Council of Constance convened to settle the question of three contending popes, three contenders, all claiming to be pope, three papal claimants, all elected by cardinals, and it was not certain in anyone's mind which one was the true pope. In fact, that the true pope at the time was Pope Gregory XII, and this was later verified in the 20th century by Pope Pius XII. But at the time, it was not known, and even during the 1800s, it was unclear in the mind of theologians as to which one was the true pope. You had prominent theologians saying that it was John the 23rd, and that was the John the 23rd living in the antipope John the 23rd living in the 1400s, and we know from historically that he abdicated, and he was he didn't really abdicate formally, but he in practical terms he abdicated. the council appointed the electors that were agreeable to all three factions, and they elected Pope Martin V after they declared Pedro de Luna, who called himself Benedict XIII, they declared him to be a heretic and a schismatic, because he said that the entire church had fallen away into schism, and that the true Catholic Church was only his followers, his very minuscule group of followers who were with him on the in that remote place in Panisculo in Spain, where he had taken refuge in his territory. And he said, "This is Noah's Ark. This is outside of the ark, there's no self."
Another attempted overthrow, obviously.
Yeah, that council in Constance, that's not the church. And he thumps on the wooden armrest of his papal throne. He says, "This is the Ark of Noah." And he was given warning that this is contrary to the dogma of faith, that the church is universal. The church, that's what Catholic means, it is universal. And those who do not have the faith of the universal church are outside of the church, they're heretics. And they said, so he was given official warning, he refused, and then the council pronounced the sentence of heresy against him. And that by the very act of heresy, this is in session 37 of the Council of Constance, by the very act of heresy, ipso iure, which is by the force of law itself, he automatically forfeited any office he may have held in the church and any ecclesiastical dignity.
Wow.
So we have a precedent. this is actually an implementation of that teaching of Pope Innocent III, that if a man is a heretic, no matter how high his office in the church, he claimed to be pope, and many thought he had a legitimate claim. Even Saint Vincent Ferrer thought he had been the valid pope. And the council declared, even if he were the pope, by the very act of heresy, he has separated himself from the church, he has forfeited any office he may have held, and he has lost all ecclesiastical dignity.
Okay.
And they pronounced the excommunication against anyone who would uh-huh. still adhere.
Right.
So we have right. the clear teaching in the church, what must be done with Francis.
Mm-hmm.
He is a heretic, and as a heretic, he cannot be tolerated in the church. And Pope Innocent III prescribes that such a man is to be cast out and trampled underfoot by men. And cast out means he is to be deposed. Trampled underfoot by men means that he is to be despised by the people, rejected by the people.
Right.
This is the teaching of Pope Innocent III, and it is it has been the unanimous teaching of theologians, as John of St. Thomas pointed out, that even if a pope were to become a heretic, he is to be judged and condemned by the church, and he is to be judged as having fallen from the pontificate. So Ballerini explains that the church would have the duty to issue a decree that in some manner that by his heresy he had abdicated his office. And this is in canon law what is called tacit renunciation. Tacit renunciation.
Mm-hmm.
So that the pope is actually resigning his office tacitly, but by an act of leaving the church, he leaves the papacy. And it is a true act of resigning the papacy, of renunciation. It is a tacit act, but it is not implicit. It is a true act of leaving the papacy when a man embraces heresy, and this is even if it's just personal heresy. But the danger with Francis is that he is turning his personal heresy into institutional heresy. He says that he wants to reform the church, and he does not want to leave office until his reforms become irreversible. And as I have outlined in my book, quoting his words, he is, if I can use the words of Jesus Christ, he is condemned by out of the words of his own mouth, because the reforms that he wants to enact in the church would change the constitution of the church against the divine constitution of the church. It would create a different church.
And it could never revert to its correct form, because it would be permanently changed. Where is this group of people, Father Kramer? Are there people out there talking about this right now, that this needs to happen? There needs to be a council, whether it gathers in Rome or it gathers somewhere else. Is this going to end up in a schism in the entire Catholic world? Or what's going to happen? What is your best guess?
It is going to end as a schism, because, and this is the heart of the third secret of Fatima, because the Vatican itself, under this false pope, under this heretic, Francis, they are the ones who are defecting from the Catholic Church. It is the Vatican that will defect from the Catholic Church. The Vatican will become the headquarters of the false counterfeit church under a false pope. And that is what is happening, because we have this heretic, Francis, who is opposed to every form of monarchical rule, and he wants a synodal church. He uses this phrase so many times that the church is going to be a synodal church. So that's why he convoked this synod on synodality, which is scheduled to end sometime later this year. And he says that the church will be a synodal church. And he said it will be a different church. A different church. Yes, indeed, it will be a different church.
Totally.
It will be a church that is constituted differently than Jesus Christ constituted the Catholic Church.
Well, it sounds like the Agenda 2030 people have gotten in thoroughly into Francis and all the thugs. Oh, I shouldn't say that. All the people he has appointed to go right along with him. It sounds more like a Bolshevik communist than a pope, this guy.
Well, there's evidence that it was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama whose hand was behind the what you called correctly a coup d'état. The Vatican is a state. The Vatican is a state.
Yes.
And it was their intervention and that of others. The financial powers of the world who couldn't tolerate Benedict as pope. They didn't want Pope Ratzinger, and so that they used coercive means to the extent that Pope Benedict, when he was interviewed by Peter Zeewolde, when he spoke about his renunciation, supposed resignation, but it was his renunciation of his ministry, that he said that the pressures were so great that he even used the term Antichrist, that he was up against the forces of Antichrist.
Wow.
That the pressures were so great that it would have killed him if he had resisted any longer and remained active in his papal ministry. And that he said I would have died. He said, I would have died anyways, and my pontificate would have ended.
So that's a remarkable thing. I didn't know about this. That he said that out loud.
He said that very. It's in his autobiography. It's in his biography written by Peter Zeewolde. Benedict der Sechzehnte ein Leben. That's the title of the book in German. Benedict the 16th. His life. And in the interview with the author of the book, Zeewolde. Benedict actually explained this in the interview, and in my book, in my second volume, The Case Against Bergoglio, I quote verbatim. I give both my English translation, and I give the original German in the footnote of Benedict saying this, that is why he renounced his ministry, because of these pressures that were put on him.
Wow. And here we have actually Hillary Clinton involved again and Obama, two of the phoniest of all time American alleged politicians. They're crooks, criminals. That's what most people think of them. And they're involved with absolutely overthrowing the pontiff, the pope, the legitimate pope. That's another, a new high water mark for evil. I've not heard this before. That's extraordinary.
So now you have a so-called pope who is entirely promoting the Agenda 2030 of the United Nations, which is the agenda of this sect of Freemasonry.
Sure.
Yeah. So much so, when Archbishop Carlo Maria Viganò was asked in a letter from a cloistered nun, if Jesus Christ would come down to earth today, would he recognize his church? And the Archbishop says, yes, he would recognize his church, but not in the sect that occupies the Vatican.
Hmm.
And that is very correct, because it is a sect. It is a Luciferian sect of Freemasonry. They who are Gnostics, Luciferians, devil worshippers, they are the ones now who have a stranglehold on power. They are the ones who have who usurp the power in the Vatican.
Uh-huh.
The church prescribes that when a heretic, who was the ringleader of this group, Francis, gained power in the church, that they are simply to be removed. They are to be cast out. You don't address them with the respect of the papal office, making filial corrections. Dear Holy Father, we beg to differ with you. We think what you teach is heresy, and we know this is heresy, but since you're the pope, we can't judge you. No, that's false. That's defeatism. The church says, with the voice of Pope Innocent III, he is to be cast out and trampled underfoot by men, because the heretic is an alien. He doesn't belong to the church. He is to be simply cast out.
Yeah. I don't mean to interrupt, but there must be some organization and action must be taken. This is getting to be too serious. The tenets of Agenda 2030, the tenets of world global Bolshevik Marxist communism, in my view, I'm not speaking for anyone but myself, are clearly being pushed by this imposter. He's a criminal. The church is in dire condition right now. Are there men and women enough to bring action as it should be brought against this fraud?
There are some cardinals. Some names were mentioned to me. It was in private discussions.
Yes.
Where two of the cardinals expressed their doubts about this man being a true pope. Mm-hmm. And there are cardinals who have, in private, expressed their belief up until recently that Benedict was a true pope and not Francis. The reason why they are not speaking out at the time, at that time, and now is they would be singled out and neutralized if they were to act individually or as a small group. So they are waiting for the time, mm-hmm, when Francis will cross that red line that will be visible to the Catholic hierarchy. I mean, those of the bishops in the church who still have the Catholic faith. That when he does something that is so egregious that anyone who has an ounce of common sense will see that this man is an alien. He is not a member of the Catholic Church. He represents a false religion. He represents forces that are totally inimical, opposed to the Catholic Church and the entire Catholic belief system. And as such, when that becomes visible and obvious, when it becomes obvious to all who have the Catholic faith, then these cardinals and bishops will speak out, then they will convene and take action. It will happen. There's no doubt about it. It will take place, but it's only a question of time. And my own personal opinion is that what Francis has done is he has given the power, with the power of the papacy, has been transferred to the national hierarchies so that the church will be ruled by synods, and that the rulings for reforming the church in order to destroy the Catholic Church and replace it with a new religion, that of the United Nations, the false and counterfeit church of the UN Agenda 2030 is going to be implemented by the national hierarchies. And it sounds so it sounds so democratic, doesn't it? But it's not, because who's in charge of appointing the bishops? It is that gang of sectarians in the Vatican who are the ones who confirm or reject the appointments of bishops. And they, just like the synod in Rome, they're all handpicked members who are going to be always a majority of yes men. And just as window dressing, they have a couple of dissenters, visible vocal dissenters. A few of them.
Well, they got to play the game. Yes, they do the same with us through the mainstream media here, the alt media, whatever you want to call it. They throw us a few bones and make us think that, there's still a chance. Yeah, we're going to get the truth out. This is an overthrow. This has been planned for a long time.
So the way Francis controls the synod in Rome is the same way his Vatican controls the national hierarchies and their synods. So it is actually a dictatorial church.
Wow.
The papal monarchy is being replaced by an anti-papal dictatorship under the guise of a more democratic rule of synodality, of the college of the college of national hierarchies of bishops, the college of bishops, collegiality as they call it at the Vatican II, will be governing the church. But even so, even if it were the case, which it is not, it is simply a democracy like the Soviet Union, where all the elections were held under the scrutiny of the KGB, and the voters would go into the voting booth.
Right.
And if anyone used the pencil to pencil in the name of a candidate, they were interrogated by the KGB.
Well, it sounds very much, Father Kramer, like the church has been weaponized by the global elite who are running the whole show now. And I don't. This is going to be a difficult one. They will not want to give up control of the Catholic Church. This is going to be tough. This is going to take some brave men standing forthright on principle, ethics, morality, and history to turn this thing around. This Francis is a very creepy person to actually watch. If you can't figure out there's something wrong with a guy just by watching him and listening to his demeanor, you're not paying attention. That's my view again. But that's how I see it.
Your view is absolutely correct. So many Catholics are saying that this man is evil.
Very good. Well, he sure as hell is, in my view.
And when it becomes obvious that he is opposed to the Catholic Church, that he is actually an enemy of the Catholic Church, when his reforms will be such that the Vatican will rubber stamp what the so-called synods, the national hierarchies will approve of false rituals and rites, of sacraments and of the Mass, and when they have a false Mass, especially when they decree a false and illegitimate Mass, which will be a counterfeit Mass of a counterfeit church, that is finally when they will have crossed the line. And then those Catholics in the hierarchy, the bishops and cardinals and priests, when they see this takes place, then they will no longer hesitate their doubts will be resolved by that very fact, that it will be clear that they have defected, that they themselves have left the Catholic Church, that they have created a false church. They have created not a reform, but a new reformation. But they will have defected from the church and created mm-hmm. a false counterfeit parallel church. And that is when the pastors, the legitimate pastors of the churches, will finally declare them to have separated themselves from the church. And that is when they will elect their own pope, finally. That's the way I see it.
Sounds like a viable way to go. Yeah, yeah.
Unless there's a divine intervention that will take place and a true pope is elected in a less divisive manner, but I don't see it happening. What I see happening is that there will be the separation, as has always taken place in past history. As with the Arians, it became evident that they separated themselves from the church. And finally, the church mustered up enough energy to convene an ecumenical council. And the Council of Nicaea solemnly pronounced the creed, which is still professed in the church today, which clearly, unequivocally professed the divinity of Jesus Christ. And that was the basis for the condemnation of the Arians, the infallible profession of faith of the Council of Nicaea. And in so doing, it upheld the ruling of the Bishop of Alexandria, St. Alexander, who had already excommunicated Arius, the founder of the Arian heresy. And with that, that clear line of demarcation between the Catholic faith and the heresy was established, that you cross that line, you leave the Catholic Church, and that the Arians, by professing this error, by professing this denial of the divinity of Christ, had defected and from the church and had left the church, and they were no longer members or part of the Catholic Church at all. Not members of the Catholic community, not in communion with the Catholic Church. And that this will happen with Francis and his sect, that it will become visible that they have separated from themselves from the church, and then that Catholic, the smaller faction which in the church today, which are those who clearly have the faith, for those who are wavering but who are still faithful, they will gravitate back to the true profession of faith. They will reject Francis or his handpicked successor, whichever. But those who are of the reform, of the Agenda 2030 reform, they will be rejected, and a true pope will be elected, and you will have two contending churches, one true and one false, one of Jesus Christ, one of the devil, one counterfeit, one authentic, one a church that will be the successors of the apostles with the full apostolic succession, and the other, which will have no authority, no divine authority, foundation of a divine constitution in this new false counterfeit church.
False counterfeit satanic church.
Yes.
Wow. These are pretty wild times. Anything expected in the very near, we only have about a minute left, in the very near future. How did Bergoglio handle this? The death of Benedict, in your view?
He's a slick operator.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's going to do now, of course, he has pious sounding words that he can speak about
talks the cheap. Benedict. Talks cheap.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there were times, and it's been reported, those around Francis and Benedict heard them in private discussions where even in very recent years, that Benedict was not at all pleased with the changes that were being enacted by Francis, and that Benedict even raised his voice. And as you know, it was difficult for him to raise his voice. He spoke in sometimes mostly in just barely audibly more than a whisper.
Right.
But it got to he was so incensed that he raised his voice in private discussions against what Francis was doing to the church.
Yeah. Well, bravo
His personal secretary, Archbishop Gainswein, even came out and said that it broke Benedict's heart that Francis had issued the decree effectively forbidding the traditional Latin mass of the church, which, of course, he has no power to do.
No.
A pope has no power to do that.
No, I didn't think so.
Again, this is the 39th session of the Council of Constance, which declares that the pope's powers are so great that it must be delineated what are the things that the pope can do and what are beyond his power. And what is declared infallibly by the church that is beyond the power of the pope is that he cannot abolish the liturgy, that he is bound. He is bound to the traditional rite. The pope is bound to the traditional rite.
Okay. All right. We have to close for this time. We will talk to you in perhaps 2 weeks, if you're available, and see where we are at that time. You've explained this extraordinarily well. Thank you very much, Father Kramer. This is very enlightening and helpful to a lot of people.
Well, God willing, I'll be back in 2 weeks, and we can discuss further what's happening in the church and the implication for the rest of the world.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Father Kramer. You take care. We'll talk. Okay. That's it for Friday night. Have a safe weekend. We'll talk soon. Be well.